Welcome back to the Roundtable. The Cocoon Theater's Beckett Festival will take place in Poughkeepsie, New York, October 16th through the 25th. The festival includes a production of Samuel Beckett's Happy Days and two public symposia, Why Beckett, Why Now, taking place on October 18th, and a student symposium, Why Study the Arts, on October 25th. Beckett expert David Tucker will participate in the Why Beckett, Why Now symposium. He's a research fellow at the University of Chester, where he has been working on a performance history project on Beckett and British drama. David Tucker, welcome to the Roundtable.
Hi there, nice to be here.
So I'd like to start by learning where your interest in Samuel Beckett began. What is it about him and his writing that inspired you to focus so much time and attention on him?
Ooh, always difficult to pin that down. You know, he has this reputation for being difficult and austere, but I'm often put in mind of that quote by Harold Pinter, who talked about his fascination with Beckett, where he talked about Beckett as courageous and remorseless. He's brutal and unforgiving, but he's also ethical in some sort of a way. There's something fascinating to me about how Beckett had the courage of his artistic convictions to do the work that he did, because it can be austere in the sense that it's difficult for a reader or a theatre-goer, a first-timer, but Beckett teaches you, in a sense, to read his own work. It's a kind of a world unto itself, and I remember being astounded at how Beckett had managed to throw himself so thoroughly into this artistic vision of his, yet still retain a kind of a distance from it in order to be able to record it, if that makes sense. It's a sort of maneuver that he makes that I just became so fascinated with, and he's one of few authors, I think, that one doesn't become disillusioned with. The more time you spend with Beckett and his work, the more fascinating it becomes, because even though, you know, I've spent time tracing his interests and influences and all those sorts of adjacent authors and painters that he was interested in, the history of ideas, he's so keyed in to so many different aspects of art history, of literary history, and of the 20th century, the years that he was alive, 1906 to 1989, spanning the 20th century, is keyed into so many fundamental parts of it. So spending time with the singular and austere Beckett is really never that. It's spending time with a huge range of interests and possibilities, I think.
At what age were you when you first encountered your first Beckett idea, the first time you heard the name and you knew what you were hearing about?
I would have been about 19, I think, my second year. And somebody lent me a Beckett reader, you know, one of those compendium volumes with bits and pieces from a range of works. And I went straight for one that turned out is the most difficult of his, but had a particularly fascinating title, which was The Unnameable. And that's where I encountered that strange maneuver of total commitment, but somehow a sort of distance from it as well. And I was studying a philosophy degree at the time, and I just couldn't go back to the stuff after that. Beckett ruins you for other work and other authors. It's a rewarding but sometimes a difficult place to be. Yeah.
What does your research and writing involve? You have, of course, mentioned some of what you look into over the years that you've been studying Beckett, but what do you pursue, what paths do you take, and what do you hope to expose as you continue your exploration of Samuel Beckett?
Well, I've done a few different projects with Beckett now over the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
My main one has traced his interest in a really obscure philosopher, Arnold Gerlinck, 17th century Dutch thinker who nobody's heard of and Beckett hadn't heard of at the time, but he helped dig Beckett out of a hole as he was struggling to write his first published novel, Murphy. And Beckett then returned to that philosopher throughout a number of his other works. And so I wanted to find a way to read the breadth of Beckett's work, tracing that that single thread through what I was describing as, you know, that kind of rich tapestry of his work. So that's where I started, and that became my main project. But more recently, I've been working on the drama and particular productions of Beckett's drama in the UK and Ireland, and the research into those as part of a broad 3-year funded project back in the UK has thrown up a number of interesting half-told stories, names mentioned here or there that have never really been followed up. So I've been interested in exploring those kind of factual historical stories about particular productions or projects that didn't really happen, but because it's Beckett, they always lead into all sorts of interesting directions and names crop up and things.
Beckett was, of course, a novelist and playwright, theater director, and poet. Do his plays and novels, are they different to each other, excepting, of course, that stylistically they would be different because they're different presentations of the written word, but are his ideas and his word choices similar in both of those two forms?
They are, yeah. Everything Beckett is recognizably Beckett, though that's also said with some hindsight, because there is a big variety amongst his work. So his first attempt at a novel, which wasn't published until after his death in 1992, is a crazy, a kind of James Joycean medley and mesh and mess of all sorts of ideas, trying things out. And he gradually found his own voice. And then in the finding and in the exploration and the sort of self-conscious questioning of his own voice, his own kind of authorial voice in some of the big middle period prose novels, the popular story is he kind of wrote himself into a bit of a corner, and then for some relief from the troubles of prose writing, started to write drama, and it turned out that would be what gave him his worldwide reputation, and he was, you know, very good at it. And so he'd then honed the drama as he'd honed his fiction. And the characters are recognizable from the prose that are in the drama. You know, they can be the mother and father that are half buried in dustbins, and you've had buried characters in the prose, and then you have the buried Winnie of Happy Days. So and the humor is there similarly in the drama and the prose. So reading one from the other is always a good way into Beckett, I think. But his popular reputation is as a dramatist, but I'd always encourage people to go to his prose as well.
The Cocoon Theatre's Beckett Festival is the reason I get to speak with you today. They're presenting performances of Happy Days, which you just mentioned. Can you tell us a bit about the story of Happy Days and what ways it represents his work?
Sure. Well, Happy Days is a two-act play centered on Winnie, who's one of Beckett's few female lead roles. And the main striking thing that will strike anybody watching Happy Days as soon as the curtain goes up is that Winnie's buried up to her waist in a mound of earth for the first two-thirds of the play, roughly the first act. And then the second act, she's buried up to her neck under a blazing sun in the heat, with her erstwhile shuffling husband just round the corner, kind of by her side, occasionally commenting. And Winnie has a few objects that she uses, she refers to kind of help her through her day, and this bag she has by her side, and she quotes all sorts of bits of literary history now and then. She prattles is how the press release for the production describes it. She gets by. It's about getting by in the face of, I suppose, trauma or something strange. So it's about getting on. But it's always difficult to pin down what Beckett plays are about.
Of course.
There's a scene in Happy Days where two people are described coming up to Winnie and demanding to know what she's about, what she means, and the prompting of those questions is always part of the point, but the experience of kind of being there with Winnie and watching her part of the answers, I suppose, if that makes sense. It'll only really make sense if you see the play, I suppose.
The only Beckett I'm at all familiar with, as is true for many people, is Godot. I've seen 3 different productions of Waiting for Godot over the course of my life. The first one, I was quite young, and I didn't understand it, of course, and, you know, but enjoyed it. And then I wouldn't claim to understand it now, but have also always enjoyed it. I was fortunate to see the production with Surrey and McKellen and Sir Patrick Stewart here in New York when it came from London. That is the seminal work, the one that people who only know one thing know and have heard of.
Yeah.
Why do you think that one stood out, rose above? Why is that the one people know?
Well, it's the one that he became famous for initially, which was by chance in a way. It was chosen over another play because it was much cheaper to stage, because it has such an austere setting with just the tree and the moon. But it does get to the heart of a lot of Beckett's thinking. It is rightly central to his drama, I think. It's not an anomaly that's the one that everybody thinks of when they think of Beckett. It's lighter than some of the others. It's not as harsh, coruscating a work as the one that followed it, Endgame, which is a kind of post-apocalyptic boot room or bunker sort of setting, and people are bossed around a lot, though they are in Godot as well. It's funny, you know, it's really funny, Godot, and I know that the McKellen Stewart production, which I saw in the UK, was very much on that side of it, you know, playing for laughs and bringing out the music hall elements of it, the slapstick, and it's one of the works in which Beckett brings that slapstick, silly comedy that we know is so obviously comedy. It's something that's so obviously presented for us to laugh at, yet it's funny, and he's interested in that, I think, and also in the theatrics of staging. You know, they come out there every night, and we know that they do actually come out there every night because there's a production going on, and they wait every night as we wait to figure out what's going on, and we're kind of all in it together in a sense, and there's something warming about that at the same time as there's, probably not spoiling the play, no great happy ending to the play.
You are participating in a symposium at the Cocoon Theatre's Beckett Festival entitled Why Beckett, Why Now? Can you give us a little preview answering the questions posed in the title of the symposium, Why Beckett, Why Now? I think you've of course begun or maybe even succeeded in explaining why Beckett, but why now?
Why now is, well, the way I would come at that question, I suppose, and it might not be the way that I come at the question at the symposium, actually, because what I thought I might do there is talk a little bit about Happy Days, particularly the play, and the why now might be more left for those staging the play in Poughkeepsie, because what I've discovered as part of the research I've been doing back in the UK about regional productions is that they are often, as this one is, based very much in their locality. You know, they're not a kind of impersonation of a Broadway play for somewhere that's well off Broadway. So it's not supposed to be an insight into, you know, the theatre an hour down the road. It's about what happens when we stage a production, a play like this, in this setting, in this particular context, you know, within 2-3 kilometers, miles of the venue. So why now is kind of why here as well. You know, what happens when this audience sees this Beckett play, and how might this play speak to the local concerns, social, economic, whatever they are. And so I think that question might be interestingly answered by those who know Poughkeepsie better than I do.
How do you come to be involved in this festival?
Oh, friends of friends. I suppose it's no more formal than that, really. The Beckett community stretches far and wide, and calls and recommendations are often made. There's always somebody knows somebody who's doing something to do with Beckett. You know, it's been crazy over the last 10 years that I've seen. I'm probably not exaggerating to say there are hundreds of people around the world working on Beckett at the moment academically. And, you know, that's besides those who are staging productions. It's ballooned. The amount of work published on Beckett is insane. There are so many books published every year, so many projects on the go, and that's partly because, you know, there's so much in Beckett, as people have realized over the last 20 or so years, I suppose, how significant a 20th century artist he is, and how he's not his popular kind of cliched reputation of the misanthropic existentialist. There's humor and warmth and real depth there, and that's what a lot of people have been exploring in all sorts of different ways. And so I was happy to be contacted by the organizers as a representative of a project back in the UK that's been looking at regional productions, and I think the project that we have back home and the production in Poughkeepsie can mutually benefit, you know, can speak to each other usefully, I hope.
I have a final question I hope you won't find too cheeky.
Since you
spend so much of your time talking about Beckett, studying Beckett, learning about and writing about Beckett, do you ever have a day or a portion of a day where you are just like, you know what, Samuel, not right now. I don't want to think about it right now.
Yeah, there aren't times when I'm ever sick of the work of Beckett, which I've been amazed at. I really wouldn't have expected that starting work on Beckett 10 years ago. So I never am bored with Beckett. There are certainly times when I don't want to watch a Beckett play. I don't want to read something by Beckett. And there are certainly times when I don't want to hear people speak about Beckett. There are times when I need things that are very different from being involved with Beckett. And I'm planning something, a completely different project for the next couple of years, which is so far removed from, about as far removed as I could get, which is on contemporary British cinema. I'm going to try and write a book on that as some light relief from Beckett. So yeah, there are kind of times, but I'm lucky to have been working with colleagues who've worked on Beckett for longer than I've been alive and are still producing some of the best work in the world on Beckett, and that astounds me. I don't think I'll be doing that. I don't think I'm capable of that. So I'm sure a time will come when I have to say no more, Sam. But I'm not there yet.
David Tucker will participate in the Why Beckett, Why Now Symposium at the Cocoon Theater's Beckett Festival in Poughkeepsie, New York on October 18th. The festival runs October 16th through the 25th. To learn more, visit cocoontheater.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.